Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, before we delve into things, I just want to tell you about our Liverpool streaming service. It is Redmen Plus. Get involved over there for extra Redmen shows in video form, in podcast form. You've got documentaries, features, interviews, and a hell of a lot more besides. If you join as a club legend, you get the Discord chat, you'll get free merchandise and a host of extra bonus perks. It's like Netflix for Liverpool fans. Get over there, get involved. Otherwise, let's face it, you're going to miss out on amazing Liverpool stuff in your life.
Hey everyone, Redmen podcast time. Paul Machin, Steehawk, Chris Pajak back together.
Back again.
Don't do that, it's so fucking weird. when you're not, particularly when you're not troops.
Well, I just want to be troops.
Cultural appropriation, pack it in. The Chris Pajak, Steehawk, Paul Machin, Redmen podcast. Liverpool have won a game, we're in higher spirits than we've been for quite some time.
You're mad. We're in the fucking highest of high spirits.
Just had a delicious curry, scoffed down my face because I forgot the show starts at 1 o'clock.
Yeah.
But I'm all for it. I've read the agenda like 10 times, so can't wait to get started.
I'm just buzzing. We won 8-0 last night. Yeah. That's what it feels like. We won 8-0 last night.
Yeah,
I'm taking all the saves McGregor made and giving us the goals.
If it feels like we lose every time we draw, then I'm claiming an 8-0 win when we win two.
Precisely.
Yeah, I like it. If you are watching this on YouTube, we are closing in on 500,000 subscribers. If you haven't clicked that subscription button, then do so right now. We're on the road to 500K. I'm trying to say this as slowly as possible to give Si time to bring it up on screen. Fucking hell, Simon.
What if they're watching it on Twitter, Paul?
Well, yeah, they're fucked too. Si still hasn't loaded the video, whether we do it or not.
Well, they listen to this as a podcast.
Subscribe, come over to YouTube and subscribe to the YouTube channel so we can get to 500,000. We've got some cool stuff lined up, but we can't do that until we get to 500,000 because the Queen died and we didn't play games, and therefore it's taken us slightly longer to get there than anticipated.
We lost one subscriber when the Queen died, I think.
What?
The Queen. That's why. We didn't make it.
Yeah. If you're on YouTube or not on YouTube, come to YouTube, click the subscribe button to the YouTube channel.
I think your Jack told her to subscribe.
When he showed up through the window. Yeah. It's a very niche.
He's the
reference.
Last person.
The last person to see her apart from Liz Truss. We're going to be talking about Liz Truss on Podcast Extra because she's a knobhead. But we won't do that because we don't want to bring politics into the YouTube content, apparently.
Yeah, I'm fine with it.
First time for everything, right? Anyway, as we make a point of this, we've also got a billboard outside Anfield, and we've got a boss competition running right now, which we can get up on screen because I've prepared that. it's outside the cop, it's on the video screen. There's a couple of other things there, so you have to wait for it to roll around. But if you tag yourself in a photo, use the hashtag RedmenRoadTo500K on our Twitter or Instagram, and we're giving away 3 yearly subscriptions to Redmen Plus and £250 vouchers for Redmen merch as well.
I'm happy to give one extra something away for the most for the funniest picture of that billboard as well. Just be creative.
Yeah.
The funniest face in front of it. Do something.
I might have already won that because I've got one when it wasn't, when it flicked off ours.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. So
which one did it go to?
I've got a FOTMOB one.
Yeah, it flicked a FOTMOB, and I think when I saw it was like I'm sure there was an advert for the Tory party. It was the next one.
I didn't see that. Yeah, I think it was like, must have turned that off while the game was on.
I went down yesterday morning to get the foot, and it was like Tory, FOTMOB, Redmen TV. I was thinking, please don't go back to Tory again. did. Straight after us, it was like, come and work for the, it was like, we're making more British jobs for British people, came after the Red Men TV 500k channel. But to be
that's our advert as well, actually. We
The more subscribers, the more people we can give jobs. Yeah, it's in a roundabout way. Yeah. We're all
far more for the fucking British economy than the British government are at this point. Sorry, no politics in the podcast. Hashtag no politics in the podcast. Yeah, get involved. If you had the game, it's running for a few weeks, and then we've got another one going up after that. So yeah, it'll be there for at least the next home game as well.
It's there for the next four, I think. Yeah, basically. Until we get to 500k and then we might change it.
So City's the next game, the next home game, right? So yeah, the Man City game, if you're in and around Anfield, and it's running from now anyway, right?
I think so, yeah.
So yeah, you can just go down there if you're around the Anfield area and do it if you want to enter the competition. So absolutely fine. Right, kick-off question. We're going to be talking about Rangers. Obviously, we're going to talk Darwin Nunes. We're going to talk Trent Alexander-Arnold, I'm sure, in a bit. We'll talk about a couple of other bits in Arsenal ahead of the weekend. But kick-off question comes from Kieran Orr. And this is a bit deeper, I think, than what we would normally go on these. Which is normally like, what would you do? What horrible thing would have happened to you in order for Liverpool to win X, Y, and Z? Or people going, should we change formation? What's the best way to describe why football/sport is so boss? Because my missus hates football, hates when it's on, and cannot comprehend why I go full on Marv from Home Alone when Fabio Carvalho bangs in a last minute winner for the Reds. How can I make her understand that feeling?
Well, I think the only way to describe it is something similar to what Steve said. I think when your team's got the ball, it's like foreplay. Sometimes it can be good foreplay, sometimes it can be bad foreplay. Mm-hmm. But when your team scores, that is like losing your load.
Can women orgasm though?
Yes, they can. You should ask your missus why she
has. I've got a lot to learn.
Okay, sit down. We'll again, podcast extra to follow where we do the things that we can't say on this. You can talk more about fingering to your heart's content on podcast extra.
I'm gonna be fingering whore for nothing.
What do you think's the way? If you were trying to sell the end of the sport,
I understand the question. I'm keen because my missus is the same. Like, she'll watch me and she'll be like, "How can you care that much about this? Does it really matter?" And it is really hard to explain. In fact,
this is when you sit in a grump and move closer to the screen.
You know what it is, mate? Like, there's nothing in the world that makes me as happy as Liverpool winning footy games ever. I think that offends her a bit. And I think that's what it is.
Steve only got married 6 months ago, yeah. By the way.
Were you on the podcast extra last week, were you, when Steve decided to pick, if you could replay one day in your entire life again, Steve decided to pick a one-night stand.
That's not true.
It is totally and utterly true.
What happened on Isn't extra... It? Stays.
Yeah, you can't even bring it. You're not allowed to do that, aren't you? You've broken the safe space.
Share WhatsApp, you're
sharing the DMs. No, but really, like, obviously, it's the emotions, and like, not on get you like the last minute winners pumped up for it. Like, the best way to explain it, I think it is like, it's like drugs. It's an addiction. I'm addicted to football. I'm addicted to Liverpool being good. And when they're crap, I crave for them to be good again.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing it is a bit like, it's just an addiction, mate, and it is for me.
I'll be honest. Sport broadly is really boring. Most sport is boring.
Disagree.
But yeah. You're chasing moments. So football is actually one of the more boring of sports, and that's why Americans hate it, because they need more stuff going on and draws, and you get nil nils, and the idea you can play out boring games in football. It's very easy to have a boring game of football. So trying to get someone in by like going, here's a show that's 90 series, you know, 125 series in, I'm going to start you now, it's very dense, and there's a lot of mythology, and there's a lot of characters you have to learn to get into sport. So the trick is to buy in on big moments. So like finals, when the stakes is when sport is at its best. Like trying to teach someone to like cricket by saying it's a test match, sit down for 5 days, is a hard sell. But if you tune in for the final, you know, what, the final 2 hours of a test match, you're going to get into it, or you watch the last like handful of overs of a one day or whatever, that's when it matters, and that's when you get people hooked. You're never going to, it takes a special kind of person to get hooked on a nil-nil midweek draw in a game that doesn't matter. And that's what, for my wife, she loves tournament football, she loves finals, because she likes stories. And I think for people, And this is not just an exclusive men, women thing, because that's just not, that's a bit of a nonsense. But for people who need to buy into things, you can buy into because you can get the emotion. It, when it matters, it matters. It's hard to sell someone on why a game, a draw, a midweek draw matters.
It's slightly different for me. I think it's more to do with mostly being able to play the game. And from a young age, you're sort of indoctrinated into it. You know, I think for me, obviously, it's much easier as a six-year-old to get into footy. When you start playing footy, you start then talking about being one of those players. You're celebrating goals like you are Robbie Fowler or anything else, or Ian Rush, whoever it is. And then it's those situations that I think when you've played sport, you can translate to other sports. Like, I never played American football, but I can translate what I've learned playing football and tennis and doing all the other sports that makes everything else. But the jeopardy and the moments are ultimately what you're after.
Yeah,
it's endorphin chasing. I think that's what it is. Like, I will watch like Wimbledon, but just because it's on, but I don't care who wins. And I think that's the difference, really. Being a neutral in sport, it can be difficult. It can be easier. Like, I watch the NFL, and I'm hands up, like, I've got a vested interest in lots of the games because I'm gambling on loads of them. But in general, when you haven't got a side to pick and you're just watching a game, that is a bit like watching a movie or, you know, watching your TV show where you just want to see what happens. Mm-hmm. At the end of it, whoever wins and loses, I'm just going to walk away and I don't really care. Whereas when it's the Reds, that's a whole different matter because that is the endorphins, that's the drugs. Like, oh my God, that, you reference Carvalho's winner, or, you know, you reference that Barcelona game. Like I say, there are very few things in the world that can make you, that illegal, that can make you feel like you felt at those times.
I think crowds help as well. Yeah, reactions and seeing it. Because I said this to you when we were,
like, a community.
That final game of the season, last season, I was crestfallen when we didn't win the league. But I actually then watched the match of the day. I forced myself to watch it so that I could see how the afternoon actually really unfolded. And I'm very much in the minority here, but I felt better about City winning it because I could empathise with the emotional rollercoaster, seeing them go from devastation to elation. I don't like them, but I also don't hate them in that way. And I actually, like, I could put myself in their shoes and go, God, imagine how amazing that would have felt if you were down and out and then all of a sudden you've turned this round and you've won a game. That was what... That the emotion is what sells me on sport.
It is 100% the emotion of it. That's why you get, like I say, that's, you talk about going full on mad from Home Alone. That's all it is. It's the pure emotion. It's being part of a community. It's knowing the backstory and all about it. That footy, that's easy.
Go to the pub and watch a game, by the way. It makes a big difference. Watching it at home on a telly where it's you're just a bit of a weirdo clapping at the telly is different, whereas if there's a gang of people clapping at the telly. We used to go and watch all the midweek games before Redmen. We'd go to the pub and meet up and watch the Champions League games when under Benitez and with Torres up front and stuff. And it was great. Remember, it was all sat right. I don't know if you had that one, but when we had one of the penalty shootouts and there was like 20 of us around the big screen all on our knees holding hands while it was a penalty shootout. It's collectivism. That's lost.
You kind of need that, and it's good to feel part of that as well, isn't it? Like, you know,
that's why that footy, and we learned this when that behind closed doors nonsense season. I agree, it's the community thing of football as well. I think that's very different to a lot of sports. You actually get this in the NFL, which might be a reason why I'm a big NFL fan as well. It's like almost the tribalism of it as well. I think it all plays into it, but I can understand for someone who doesn't get it must look really odd.
But I think that's where the difference between a Liverpool fan and a fan of other teams and other sports, right? Because I'll give you an example. In the NFL, they've all got these caps, and they've always had caps, right? But this season, they've got the team name and they've got AFC or NFC, and it's just a one-size-fits-all cap that they've thrown a different team's badge in and put NFC or AFC, the two leagues of the NFL, in. That, for me, it really pisses me off. I like the uniqueness of a fan base. And like, I went to the Raiders game the other week and they're selling these big fat fucking chains with a Raiders badge on. And then I'm watching the crowd and everyone has got a big fat chain with their badge on. And I'm like, oh, this is actually really, I don't like this at all. I've never seen this side of it because I've never been to a game in America before. I've noticed the caps, but they've all got that. It's just a fucking template. It's why people get pissed off with kit templates. You want your team to be unique.
Yeah.
And I think Liverpool is probably the most unique of all the clubs in England, certainly, maybe even Europe in some ways. And that's something that can draw you in even more. I think the uniqueness of a fan base and a side.
Yeah, someone actually points out, I think Patrick Westmore is one of our members here on YouTube, saying that's why watch along is important. Yeah, it gives you that little, I mean, again, in the world where you're just locked in a room watching it, I have feeling I've never really understood the watch along thing until we were in lockdown and you realised it was a good way to like feel a slightly deeper connection with the people who were all in their little
I did a fucking Zoom gig with Aubrey, like me and Aubrey zoomed into each other and we zoomed into a gig and it was fucking boss. It was just like a belter Friday night because we hadn't experienced anything like that before. It was mad, like.
Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, I can totally get it.
Yeah, absolutely indeed. I hope that's been helpful to you, Kieran, or anyone who's looking to indoctrinate any other family members into their sick obsessions. Yeah, right, we've got a very, very short break. We're going to be talking Rangers. We're going to be talking the front four, Darwin Núñez et al. But yeah, we will return after this. Hey, you! Do you like amazing signed Liverpool gear to put on your wall and make yourself look really cool? Then we've got you covered. If you join Redmen Plus as a Club Legend subscriber, we've got an amazing competition prize this month. It is a signed Liverpool home 2013-14 shirt, vintage, signed by Liverpool fullback Glenn Johnson. Yes, every month we have incredible signed prizes and other amazing things to give away to our Club Legends subscribers. They also get access to our Discord. They get first access to Redmen Live show tickets. They get free merchandise and a whole host of extra bonus perks, as well as the incredible content we deliver on a daily, weekly, monthly, yearly basis. So head over to redmenplus.com. Either join as a Club Legend, or if you're a club captain, upgrade your subscription to be automatically entered into the draw for that incredible signed Liverpool shirt. Yep, get involved. If you want to be in the pot for incredible competition prizes each and every month, join as a Club Legend over on redmenplus.com. Get your name in the hat. And yeah, very, very good stuff each and every month. Right, let's talk about the front four. Rangers, we won. We're happy. Life just feels better. The spring in the step of every single person who's entered this building today. The Toffee Boys won at the weekend, so even they're in decent spirits as well. It's been feels like a cloud's been lifted. I'm made up moreover than anything else, but Chris, when we saw the team come out, it was a bit like, oh, right, okay, cool. And there was a lot of speculation, 4-2-3-1, 4-2-4, 4-4-2. Klopp's adamant that it was 4-4-2.
Bullshit. So it was Trent. Bullshit.
It was 4-2-4.
It was 4-2-4. I've got photographs on my phone proving it, like so many of them, where I've just gone ding, ding, ding from the first 15 minutes of the game. Like
the average positions, though, again, I
don't care about it. It was 4-2-4. It was full on 4-2-4. Now, they utilised Jota in a way that he was coming back to the ball, but his starting position was not where you would expect a number 10, his starting position was where a number 9 was. Like, where I was sat is halfway line, you know, your dad's seats, halfway line, Kenny, upper Kenny. You can't get a better view of the game anywhere in the ground, because you can be the same height up, but you're further away from the pitch in the main stand. It is literally the best for looking at that stuff. Like, it was a brilliant performance, and so out of character, I think, for Klopp to go to that 4-2-4, which says how pissed off he's been. Now, he might not be showing that in the media, and I think that's right. He's showing that he's putting his arm around the players and all that, but that formation and the fact that he basically went, fuck it, go and score some goals and keep it fucking tight at the back. The way that we defended, the way that we worked hard, Trent ran more than any other player on the pitch. That hasn't been mentioned at any other point this season. That is Klopp. I think he was really angry about the performances so far this season, and rightfully so.
He hates playing two up top. He just does. And because you remember him going back to Sturridge and Origi and being like, well, if they want to score loads of goals, then I'll have no choice. But it was never. It's always been a break glass. Like, it's not the first time we played 4-2-4. We've done it a number of times over the years. But to actually start a game that way, to be that bold, my fear, Steve, was that you take a man out of midfield, and whenever we've done 4-2-4 previously, you four lads are all up there and the ball's at the other end and we find no way of linking it all together. But I actually thought the ball stuck really well. I thought the fluidity in the front four was great. It was something I talked about in the final word. Salah comes in and plays, is like the right of the midfield three at times, and then Diaz does it on the other side depending on game state. So everyone had to go up front, everyone had to go on the right, everyone had to go on the left, everyone had to go in the 10, and everyone bailed back in when they needed to. It added to a collectivism, is a word I used earlier, but that's what it felt like. It felt like a team was bought into what they were doing.
Yeah, and they only had one training session on it as well, so it was very much a little bit of vibes as well, playing on instinct a little bit, which helps. I think, oddly enough, you mentioned about going to score fuckloads of goals. I actually think it was more a case of about being able to defend more solid, because what you're saying is we do not need our full-backs to be the ones doing everything for us here. So again, for the first time ever, if you've got, again, average position is a bit of a, depending on what you think of it, Trent's average position was in Liverpool's half. That's never happened this season. It just hasn't. He didn't have to go all the time. He could still run the game from right back, and often he did. You know, I referenced that pass he plays to Diaz, where I know he was offside, but it was like out of this world, obviously the free kick and stuff, but Trent didn't have to go up and down that lane. Costas was actually one more doing a bit of that. So I think, although it was a case of like getting, if you get the four lads at the attack, that the goals and the creativity is up to them, we'll be a little bit more solid at the back, like I say, and I think that proved, because there was one time they got behind Trent Alexander-Arnold, it was like in the 87th minute, and funnily enough, it was after we'd gone to back to a 4-3-3, not once in that 4-2-4 formation with the in behind our fullbacks just didn't happen because the space wasn't there for them. I think it was more Jürgen, and I think he referenced his post game saying like we had to defend better as a group, and he's made it easier for them in that regard to say you don't have to worry about chasing space because we're not going to give them any. Because, and I'm guessing, you know, Gio Van Bronckhorst and Rangers all week would have been training, because everyone does find the space behind the fullbacks. Find the space behind the fullbacks.
Yeah. Oh, can't wait for this. All this space that's going to be behind Trent, and Trent in his face.
Anything at all? Did he like? Yeah. No, one time he did have. Actually, was it first half they attacked the cop? It was, wasn't it? And he got fouled. That was the only time really. And then I think there was something else just in front of the box, but nothing to do with.
One when he played a ball, he gets in and he plays that ball toward the back post. Doesn't hit anyone. Yeah. But I thought what was interesting about it was, I think we've been trying to engineer it to be 4-2-4. In game, which is the idea of putting Harvey Elliott in the midfield. There's a guy who goes up, and people are saying, well, he's not doing the covering work, so we're not asking the right midfielder to do that, come in and do the dirty work behind Trent anymore. But there's something about the psychological thing of telling your opponent that you're putting four forwards on makes them go, ah, shit. Whereas if you go, well, it's gonna be four up front. By the time we get up and running, well, nah, it's all right. We'll just play our game and not worry about it. That psychological threat of, oh shit, we've really got to think about how we defend these lads. You know, we've been gearing up towards it. Just felt a little bit like we're just gonna be more overt about this. We're just gonna tell everyone's being like, no, they play 4-3-3, and this is what they're gonna do. We're playing this fucking deal.
But it was basically the way that they did. It was the way that they were. You know, fluid was mentioned loads over. You know, you mentioned it before. I've heard it loads over the last sort of 12, 15 hours or whatever. They played with a freedom and a fluidity that looks like it's been trained, to be quite honest with you. The way that Jota was coming back into space, like normally how we build up, you know, everyone knows how we build up from the back, but the way we were building up yesterday was Alisson Becker to Trent Alexander-Arnold, Jota would run off the centre half, the ball would get played into him, and we'd be gone. And it was that simple. It was two passes and we were out. That's not normally how easy it is for us, but, and this, you know, brings us on to the second part of the agenda on this. I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, but I also feel that it was partly to do with the fact that they had five at the back and Liverpool knew they were going to play five at the back.
100%. What it effectively did, it made your midfield battle. Jordan Henderson, Thiago against Stephen Davis and John Lundstrom, and you fancy your chances every single time. You know, if that was two against three and outnumbered, Rangers didn't react. I think Van Bronckhorst could have reacted earlier and switched away from that back five, because all that was happening was their fullbacks were pinned back by our wingers, and then they were trying to play through the middle, and Henderson, I thought, was brilliant.
Yeah.
Both, and Thiago, with all due respect, like Steve Davis and John Lundstrom aren't in the Premier League because they weren't cut out for it. That's why the two
of them with space, like they're used to playing with six bodies in the middle of the park. There was four bodies in the middle of the park. Thiago and Hendo and Spaceman, it's too easy.
Yeah, and in doing so as well, because that's right. We cleared up a bit of traffic from the middle of the park by having putting one less body in ourselves, which actually freed up passing lanes to get the ball forward to the forward guys. And one thing I said about Trent as well is when we actually went back to having someone a bit more alongside them, so he doesn't have to play the hero ball every single time it comes to him. He's been so isolated this season. And he doesn't want, you know, this whole first pass forward thing that we've all now read, you know, in Pep's book and all that. That gets in your head, I think, negatively sometimes, particularly for Trent, who's constantly trying to make something magic happen. Well, if you can make the magic happen, great. But if not, well, you know, Endo's just...
There's most five,
five, five, 10 yards inside you. It's easier to hit Salah because you can actually keep that width. You've got two guys who you can hit in the middle if you want to just play that more direct ball. The whole thing, again, space is the right thing. We just withdrew from all the areas that people would have expected us to be and then played into those areas as opposed to everything, you know, being...
It was quite strange, wasn't it? Because they had five defenders and we had four attackers, and yet there was a lot of space. There was a lot of space there because... It was Salah doing the thing that Salah does, where he's very wide. But because we had Nunes and Jota, they couldn't double up on him. It was hard for them to do that because they didn't have a winger per se to get back. So they could, and the centre half was reluctant to go over because he had Darwin or he had Jota.
And both him and Diaz, when they do that cut inside on their foot thing, because you've got two guys in the middle occupying people, it's harder for them to free someone up to.
There should have been an extra body though, and that's where I think Rangers fucked up, because there should have always been two, because they have one man more, but it just didn't work out like that on the night. You're absolutely right.
Conor Goldstone was good for them in defence, but the others I thought another lad that gives the penalty away, and they did struggle a little. But I agree. I just don't think they didn't get right. They didn't read Pep Linders' book. Like from the kickoff, Glasgow Rangers hit a long. They lined everyone up on their right and hit a long ball towards Virgil van Dijk.
Yeah,
and
that was stupid. I turned around to your dad and was like, no one kicks the ball at Virgil van
Dijk. I was like, have these not watched us? Like, everyone hits it over there. Where Trent, have these not done any homework? They didn't react at all. I don't want to steal your agenda too much, but like, you know, what's the likelihood we see this going forward again? I don't think you can do that, even against a lot of Premier League teams. That would be hard to do, especially the midfield battle would be a tough one. But against teams like, with all due respect, like who aren't the quality that Rangers have, then
and
I think it's more there for you.
Tactical flexibility, I think we lost last season big time. I think you look at our successful seasons, we've had two or three formations in our locker that we've gone to, predominantly 4-3-3, but we go away to West Ham and play 4-2-2-2 three seasons ago. I think it's 18-19. Remember the orange kit, and like Oxlade-Chamberlain plays in the mid, the right of the mid.
Is that when Sturridge and Origi played up top, or is that even earlier?
I think that's it. That's different.
That was the first game we played at the West Ham Stadium.
But we did it when you've got like Shaqiri available to you and all that. You know, we've done 4-2-3-1, bringing Origi in, and just it's 4-2-4, but it's 4-2-3-1. Having that there, you need to do it a couple more times. You need to get up to speed with it, and I agree. I'm not sure there's a well where you go to the Emirates and empty the midfield.
But the thing that it did do for us is it did solidify us defensively. And if that's what we're looking to achieve, then I think you're playing more into we can nick one.
Yeah.
Because the way that Liverpool worked it last night, you know, I've been saying to you guys for absolutely ages now, it's not the midfield's job to cover Trent. Well, last night it was the midfield job to cover Trent Alexander-Arnold. It was Jordan Henderson getting in behind. And, you know, numerous times your dad turned around and Elvin go, he's done it again. And then on the other side, flip reverse, Thiago's doing exactly the same. But what it did do is that it put Matip and Van Dijk closer together,
yeah,
and it stopped that ball through the middle of us.
Yeah.
Now, that's what Arsenal will be looking to try and do to us. So if you want to stop that ball, is this a way to do that? Yeah. Do the strikers need to be as advanced? Do we maybe need to drop Jota's starting position slightly deeper? So it's not quite a 4-2-4, but the makeup of the back line, I think, worked really well. I wouldn't be surprised to see that section of the formation against Arsenal.
I think you could do it, but just swap Jota out for Bobby. And it's kind of falling between two fences. He's not a striker, but he's not a midfielder.
Or you drop Nunes out and Jota becomes the...
Yeah, yeah. But
either way, you've got harder working.
Yeah, Bobby becomes more of a 10 than a second striker or a midfielder. He kind of floats because he can go and stand on Thomas Partey or Granit Xhaka, whoever they do in there. But I'm with you. One thing I noticed as well is that because it was two in midfield, their spacing was excellent. They didn't, like, again, one of the things that has happened previously is that we've been dragged everywhere, and that's been really hard because it's been up to the midfielders and Trent, Jürgen referenced this as well, to go and lead the press. We have four lads up front. They did the press. The press started with all four. I thought we pressed so much better. So when they went, everyone else, there was a couple of times in the first half, very early on the left, where Matip goes straight on the press and wins it in their final third. Then Van Dijk does the same a bit later because we penned them back in.
Yeah.
We haven't been pressing. We haven't been a good pressing team at all this season. It's been ones and twos rather than fives and sixes.
And there was more to the thing as well, where it's not planned, it's not organised, it's not felt like that all season long, but what it did was it put the onus on the lads who were good at passing the ball, and it also put the onus on the lads who are naturally attackingly gifted to do the things they're good at. So Trent, just pass the ball, mate. Don't feel like you need to go and make a barnstorm and run as an inverted wing, you know, fullback into the number nine position. No, stick in the areas where you're good with the ball. Thiago, same, Henderson the same. And then, like, it looked like we had space. And I mentioned this on Darwin Núñez. Núñez now, the signing makes perfect sense to me. And not because I think we're going to play four up front every week, but because he is cumbersome. And if you need him to knit things together, he's going to look shit. Because he's not that good a complete footballer. But if you've just got him around the box, sitting on the shoulder, how all of a sudden we found space behind them when they were parked on the edge of the 18-yard box? Because Darwin Núñez has got great game intelligence when it comes to forward running. And then all of a sudden Salah's got runners in front of him and he can pick players out. And Jota can make them run, and Diaz can make them do. And we just, it's like good passes don't need to know where people are going to be. They don't know where to run. Make your runs and I'll find you.
And there's more options.
Yes.
So if, and as Salah had this a lot, and he nearly scores because of it. I think McGregor makes a really good save, is that he's cutting in from that right-hand side, and usually he's got one centre-forward to pass it to, or a shot, or he's looking to go switch it to Luis Diaz, and I don't think he really wants to ever do that, Mo Salah. This time, as he's running inside for that one, you'll see there's two strikers and there's the pass and there's the edge of the box pass, and before you know it, there's only one man closing Mo Salah, and all the best.
Yeah.
No one in the world stopping Mo Salah really in that situation. So you mentioned both that they had a back five, but they were so preoccupied with everything else going on. That's where the space came from, which is, again, crazy to say because they had a back five. And Rangers, they with Barisic and Tavernier, I've watched a fair bit of them this season, especially last season. They like to go. Really, really, that's it. Again, talk about attacking outlets.
Could they have fooled me.
They couldn't.
No, not until the 88th minute.
Well, of course they couldn't. There was no way they could, because if they went, they're leaving Luis Diaz one-on-one with a right-sided centre. And the one time that happened, he gives a fucking penalty away.
Yeah.
So they couldn't afford to do it. And again, because Tavernier was so pinned back, Costas at the freedom of Anfield on that left-hand side all game. It was all there. It was crazy to think, like I say, with that much space, Costas was in acres of it. And I think that was the key for me, is that it penned Rangers back, so Thiago and Henderson had a little bit more time on the ball. They were up against lads who were well better than the fullback. It made sense against a weaker opposition. Whether you could do that against, well, Arsenal are currently the best team in the league, as I say, can you do that? Can you go and impose your will? Are you brave enough to do it? We'll find out on Sunday.
Best thing about us at the weekend was the fact that we're really good at challenging teams horizontally. We challenged them horizontally and vertically. Sorry, not at the weekend, last night.
Last night,
challenged them both horizontally and vertically, and that's something that Rangers could not deal with, because we had the switches, we had the wide space, but we also had Núñez runs in behind. And when we're at our absolute best, we do alternating runs. One will come deep, one will go long. Núñez and Jota were doing that all game. Núñez might just get a ball, flick it around the corner, Jota might come deep, flick the ball to Mo, and Mo will play the ball because the other striker's gone forwards. Like, time and time again, Núñez, I've got notes from the game last night whenever it breaks down in play. And what's quite interesting is to read it, a bit like the way you've done the books over the years. You see the fucking how annoyed I am at the start, and I'm like, oaf about Núñez, like, can't control the ball, really not a good passer. And then as you read through me notes, it's like, another great run, wow. Another run, always hits the target, or always seems to try and hit the target. Like, when you put him in the penalty area, he knows how to hit the target. He's going to work goalkeepers, and he's making the right decisions, I think, when he's hitting the byline.
Yeah,
not always the perfect pass, But instead of going for a shot from a tight angle, he is trying to play that percentage ball to the penalty spot and stuff like that. He is a fucking danger in the final third.
He, again, we were talking about the final third. Yeah, well, we had Abby Rudkin on. She was saying that she left and there's a fella behind her, like, cussing and spitting about her, like, oh, Nunes, he's not good enough, and blah, 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 blah.
I heard one cut your hair shout last night.
Course,
which is always,
yeah, it's the old,
it's always going to happen.
It's the old Lucas Leiva vibes, that.
But also about Costas,
yeah, definitely. Even Klopp said that to him the other day, didn't he? But the thing about it for me is, I'm not, if you're expecting him to be Erling Haaland, then you're going to be disappointed because nobody's Erling Haaland. And I know we've hyped ourselves up and we had a good old laugh in the Community Shield and all that kind of stuff, but look. The only thing that's going to stop Erling Haaland from scoring a bazillion goals this season is an injury.
Yeah.
That's the only thing that's going
to
stop him.
To showcase how we all felt about Haaland, I think every one of us would have preferred Haaland over Mbappe when the Mbappe talk was going on a year and a half, 2 years ago. I think every one of us said we'd rather have Haaland than Mbappe.
But the thing for Nunes is this. It's about what he does as a number nine and its movement. And I saw enough there to go, I can see how he's going to score goals for Liverpool. Whereas when you're playing him centre of a three and the ball's, you know, he's awkwardly controlling it and we're about fast, fluid movements and every touch has got to be perfect, this intricate brand of football, he's going to struggle if we ask him to do that. Whereas if he's got people around him and he's a physical presence and he's just picking his time and his moments, those shots will go in. Like, there's the two that I mentioned on the final word. There's the one where it comes over his shoulder and he's peeled off to the left and he brings it down into
Hendo's
his path. Ball,
that one, was it?
It might be, yeah. But he takes it right-footed, which is a little Hendo's body ball. Position.
That's the one. That's
awkward.
That's the one I think he should have scored. The others are snapshots.
And the other one is where he comes through, again, into that sort of left of centre and he strikes it left-footed and it's a bit down the keeper's throat.
Jota played that ball.
But it's
brilliant.
But
brilliant run for that one.
Both of them are great runs. They're actually great control as well. So he's not like, he isn't a donkey. It's just that he's not a neat and tidy
passer. He's a bit of a bundler as a dribbler. Yeah. Like his first touch and get, he doesn't quite get the ball out from under his feet quick enough, I don't think.
But he's
not good with his back to goal.
It like,
but he strikes it, yeah, and he knows exactly where the fucking goal is. His run, mate. It's the timing of his run and the angles that he takes. That's what's going to free him up over.
He's a bit Lukaku-ish for me, and what Lukaku is, not what people think Lukaku is. Everyone think he's this target man, he'll bring people in. He's not. He's like Torres or Owen
Vardy,
but in a 6'3"
18-stone,
you know, kind of body. You're right. He's not gonna be brilliant at bringing people in. I think he's not too bad at that, actually. To be fair, he was doing a lot of the right things. And Klopp referenced the one where he cut it back to the edge, and Klopp said two guys made the run to the goal line. Whereas if they'd known it, one of them would have just sat off and.
Jota and Diaz went, didn't he?
Yeah.
He's a rough timer, is what he is. I think he's. You go back to the Haaland thing because everyone's going to compare them now. Man City bought the Ferrari and we bought the kit car that can make it a Ferrari when you get there. We've got to put it all together. The pieces are all there for him. There's some things he needs to get better at. Like, I think he should have scored the one when he controls it. I think Haaland scored. For example, again, I don't want to compare.
Yeah, you're right. But he's doing the right things
there.
He's taking a shot early.
Yeah.
And that for me is, you'll just, the next one will just go in.
Let's not take anything from the goalkeeper, by the way. Yeah, he was fucking brilliant.
The Jota saves.
Outrageous. But in the Nunes stuff, like Vardy again, Vardy takes a shot early. Top strikers get a whiff of goal and bang them. Yeah. You watch Torres's goals back, and I am astounded. We don't own a Fernando Torres, and we haven't owned one since Fernando Torres. How many goals where he's 25 yards out, he's outside the box, and he just arrows it into the bottom corner? Like, Fowler could do that. And Owen had a little bit.
Harry Kane did that.
Just take them by surprise.
Exactly. Nunes looks like he'll be that. Salah's really, nobody really that. And so when you watch Torres' goal, I haven't seen anyone score Torres-like goals since Torres. So it's quite refreshing watching his stuff back. And I guess Suarez had different types of goals as well, and a little bit of that. He feels to me like he might, I can see him doing that, which would be absolutely amazing for us, let's be perfectly honest. But it was good. It was. I put a tweet out, and then I saw Klopp's post-match press conference, and both had that thing of like, I think we all needed that. I think everyone, I think the players needed that. I think the fans needed that. I think the coaches needed that. It felt, Chris, like a Liverpool performance. It was different to how we've gone about it in some regards, where people are on the pitch. But that was the first time almost all season, with the exception of maybe Bournemouth, which I think was just...
We managed the game really, really well. Second half, we didn't put ourselves about too much. The lads knew that they've had two games this week for the most part, all of them. The lads probably know that they're going to be playing Arsenal for the most part again. They were managing expectations. Second half, yes, we wanted 3, 4 and 5. They didn't really try and do that. They just tried to kill the game. The substitutes, I don't think, worked particularly well. I think Bobby Firmino will be slightly disappointed.
I thought he was really good when he came
in that... they found a formation where he can score, and now they've changed it, and he's back to being the assist king.
But did you notice one moment in that way, because he looked so sharp when he came on, he knitted it together deep, and then the ball goes out wide, and all of a sudden, when the ball gets ready to come into the box, he's in the number 9 again, which I think was a really, really encouraging thing. He was the bright spark of the subs.
Oh, I'm not saying he had a bad game. I'm saying he'll be disappointed because they changed the formation on him. Yeah. So I think that's going to be difficult for him, because I don't think it'll be his job necessarily to get on the end of things. I think I saw people talking about James Milner and coming on and losing control of the game. There was about 88 and 89 minutes where we lost control of the game, and it was 2-0. Alisson makes a massive save. Kostas hits the ball over the bar, wasn't he, with an unbelievable clearance. But one of the best things about it was Klopp was able to manage that game and able to give Trent Alexander-Arnold a standing ovation and let the entire crowd sing his name, which we've not been in a position to do for a long time. That is great man management. I don't know whether you spoke about that in the final word or
absolutely,
whatever.
Like, it was huge, and it was everything was the perfect storm for Trent. I described it as, you know, you're there. It was the greatest pedestal you could be put on for that moment. All the spotlights on him. You know, it's BT. I mean, the BT coverage of it was so big. They had like a separate presenter table down the Rangers end with like Kenny Miller on and a Scottish presenter as well. So they were giving it. They doubled up on the amount of people they have because they made it a big deal. Everyone would have watched that game. Everyone, neutrals, would have paid attention to that game last night, and everyone's aware of this thing with Trent. And then here you go, Gareth Southgate, world, all your critics. That's a thing, you know. Defensive, we can talk about his defensive things in a different world. Show me your right backs who are going to go up and score.
You know, show me as well. It showed me that if you ask him to just be a right back, he's brilliant at it. He was more of a right back, normal, like what you'd say is a normal right back, just one who's an absolute wizard with the ball at his feet. But he wasn't asked to do a million different things. He's fine. He can absolutely do that job. What, a couple of times he tried to run him one on one, didn't get no joy out of it. I think
it was more back to basics for a lot of players.
Back to basics
for Thiago, for Hendo, for Trent,
for Van Dijk,
for the centre halves. Yep. Exactly. Yeah, that's
Trent's
it.
Got the hardest job in world football. Normally, he plays two positions at once. No one else in world football plays two positions at once. When you explain it like that to them, people probably gain a bit of understanding about how hard it actually is. He plays your fucking right winger, creative Kevin De Bruyne style role, and he plays right back at the same time in the same fucking 90 minutes. He didn't have to do that last night. In shock, he looked really good.
I think we did the debate show this week, and someone pointed that out. I think it was Sam was talking about Kevin De Bruyne, and everyone goes, your lineup formations, you know, City play 4-3-3, same as Liverpool. Kevin De Bruyne plays a free role for Man City because they let him go whenever they want.
He's the overload man at all times, isn't he?
Yeah, and you look at his touch maps, and it's literally he plays in the opposition half. And he'll drop a little bit deep every now and again, but there's no, it's fractionally more right side than it is left side. But he covers everywhere. He'll go wherever he needs to go because you afford someone who's that good the ability to do that. And Liverpool don't. With Trent, Liverpool go, no, we want you to get high and wide on the right hand side. Oh, and also come for the last stitch tackling and clear stuff off the line at the same time. And he hasn't got Kyle Walker's pace, because if he had Kyle Walker's pace, he would be like, it'd be something else. He'd be a Haaland-like freak of nature if he had that level of recovery pace as well. But he doesn't need it because he's absolutely magic. But I love that. I love that about that. It's just like, that's fine. Just go and do some simple stuff. We said this. You've got every one of those lads who we kept back. So there's seven lads, including the goalie, are all playmakers in their own way. they all can just, they can all pick a pass out, they can all carry the ball. They've all got a little bit of, you know, a little bit of extra about them to normal players, and we just went, right, cool, sit in, do some defending, and then kick it to one of the four lads and let them sort the other shit out.
I think also, I think the strikers probably found it a little bit easier without just a random Trent popping up in the middle of play. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes, you know, when he pops up on the edge of the area, you're like, where the fucking hell have you come from? You're bringing a man with you, or it's clogging space and stuff, and the lads just went about the business.
Well, let the lads who are good in the final third be in the final third. As opposed to asking the right back to also play centre forward as well as right mid, right wing and fucking creative
player. Like the play that we had for the free kick that Trent scores down that left hand side, was it Costas, Diaz, maybe Thiago or Jota? It was three of them four, I think. That was brilliant football, and he's pulled down and we score from. That football was absolutely terrific.
So I just got, well, that was Nunes being a Nunes, wasn't it? Nunes. Well, it gets played into him. I just got, and it was Ben Davies, wasn't it? Just wiped, go through the back of him because Liverpool had picked him apart, basically. We started, to round up, obviously, we started so much better.
We didn't concede.
Well, four
early.
Minutes. Yeah, well, not even
fantastic.
That. But we didn't even get him a kick, and that's the thing, is that. That was really important. It's cliche, but like when confidence is low, the last thing you want to do is give the other team. And we did that. We against Brighton, we conceded literally everything.
That's why and it's not the start of the game, but the Tsimikas clearance is huge. And one of the points of
the clean sheet
is to say, we will never talk about that again once we get out of this week. But that to be able to just go. Clean sheet, we kept the shutdown. Everyone's talking about the formation and the attacking players, and not I'm not sure how we would have coped if that goes in. Certainly we would have walked out the ground going, oh, it was all right, but is that
should
really
be
the
beaten
solution
them by
to
more
all
than...
our problems, etc. No, brilliant stuff.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Right, we've got a new partnership on the podcasts. It is Who Knows Wins, who, if you've been with us, will remember them from last season as well. It is the app where this week we've got a pick 10 league where basically there's 10 fixtures and you'd have to choose who wins, whether it's going to be a draw or whether it's going to be a draw. Really, really simple stuff. Steve, would you care to talk us through
all of it? Yeah, so thing? Basically, right, last year when everyone was playing through the app and Who Knows Wins, what they've done this year, they've gone specific. They love us and we love them. So we've got our own version, redmen.whoknowswins.com. So yeah, it's our graphics on it. It's got all the other, we've got bring it on the screen for us now. See, got all our colours on it, all that kind of stuff as well. So it's our own version of it. So basically, you're playing against other Liverpool fans and getting involved with that kind of stuff as well. So yeah, it's our own version. So I think Who Knows Wins must have been happy with us last year because they've boxed us off.
It's a good game though, it's fun. It's dead easy to play as well, you know what I mean? And you can literally guess and win.
Yeah,
which well, I like.
Got a lot of that. Like, yeah.
Well, the best thing really is that you don't have to get them all right to win. Because that never happens. Like, it's hard to get that. You can't do
that. I think I got 8 once, maybe. I think someone got a 9, didn't they? Slightly. Someone got I think 3 people got a 9 one week.
Yeah. This is the thing. You know, you guys do Achers and I've done that kind of thing, and ultimately if one people always talk about it, one lets you down, it's a last minute equaliser or whatever, or someone not getting over the line and it that does it all in, whereas you're right, you know, you can win on sixes and sevens or you can get yourself into the prize pool by doing that. So yeah, it is good fun. Make sure, by the way, you're 18 plus and obviously be gamble aware. If you've got any issues with any of those kind of things, then don't get involved with this stuff. But if you want something that kind of ads around it and you can play alongside us as well, then do get involved. If you're on YouTube, the QR code will be on screen, so you can just scan that. The link will be in the description underneath. But yeah, you can go to the web address as well.
Yeah, a couple of things. So obviously we're playing, and last year we had the office-wide tournament where the loser wore the hat. Yeah. We'll go back to it again, but it's just us three this time. Look, it's here somewhere. Yeah. It was around there somewhere. It's over there. It's over there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Behind the telly. Place.
Behind the telly and a microphone, because why wouldn't it be?
It's up there with the dunce's bib, which Tom hid because he kept making him wear it.
And then, need to bring that back, baby.
I spoke to Who Knows Wins this morning. Basically, what they've said
is bad morale management, apparently. I got told. Nah, carry on.
Put the hat on us instead. One of the cool things is this week, because it's obviously to launch our new version of the game. If anyone plays the game, a fair play if you do, like I say, like Paul mentioned, gamble away at 18 plus, all that stuff as well. If you're playing the pick 10 this week, send a screenshot of your pick on Twitter to us at the Redmen TV and at Who Knows Wins. If you do that, they're going to give away to one of these people a PlayStation.
With FIFA 23.
With FIFA 23.
A PlayStation 1.
PlayStation
5.
Five!
Yeah, the unicorn of PlayStations. The rocking horse shit of PlayStations. Yeah.
A PS5 of FIFA for someone, and then three copies of FIFA for three others as well. So yeah, if you
copies play, for three others.
Yeah, okay, there was a lot of F's in that, wasn't there?
I tried to say it right.
I do say three with a foot, right? That's, yeah. Blame me. I need to be my daughter's phonics.
Yeah, doing phonics with your kids is good fun.
I just said phonics with a foot. So again, I'm fucked with lots of F's. But yeah, like I say, it's redmen.whoknowswins.com. Rather than going to the app, go to that version, because, like I say, let us know that we sent you, like I say, be playing against us.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very quickly, the first one was Bournemouth versus Leicester.
Oh, yeah, do you want to just quickly whiz through the 10?
Yeah, yeah. Bournemouth, Leicester, Chelsea, Wolves, City, Southampton, Newcastle, Brentford, Stoke, Sheffield United, Milan v Juve, Dortmund v Bayern, and Brighton v Spurs, Sevilla v Athletic Club as well. Oh, there's another one. Getafe versus Real Madrid. So I mean, all Saturday ten games.
It's in the name.
What I like about it, right, is I learn a little bit about the other leagues every time I do this.
Yeah.
So you went to my Athletic Club a good eye. I said, how the fuck do you know that?
I looked at the league table. I'm like, I'm really, really quite surprised with just how good Napoli are as well. Shouldn't be, considering, you know, they're whooping everybody in our Champions League group. But yeah, very, very, very surprised at Athletic Club and where they were in the league, like seven wins or something.
Who was the best last year, do we remember, on this out of us? Was it me?
Yeah, let's just say it was me, and I've done.
Okay.
It was definitely me. Yes.
No, it was me.
Link in the description.
Yeah, which is.
Or the QR code, come and play with us. It makes us look boss as well when you come and play through our link. So yeah, if you see Who Knows Wins elsewhere, don't play through them. Play through ours. But yeah, we'll be going through. We have done our picks, which we can quickly whiz through. I've just worked out how that graphic works. Yeah, I was like, I've picked a lot of draws there. I got Leicester to beat Bournemouth, Chelsea to beat Wolves, City to beat Southampton, Newcastle to beat Brentford, Spurs to beat Brighton, a draw between Stoke and Sheffield United, because no idea, AC Milan to beat Juve, Bayern to beat Dortmund, Sevilla to beat Athletic Bilbao, and Real Madrid to beat Getafe. Chris and Steve have also gone through their picks as well. Really simple, really, really simple stuff. We'll be finding out how everyone's got on.
No draws for me. Fucking no fence sitting allowed there, look at that.
Wow.
A lot of away wins as well. I think I might have fucked that up.
Yeah, you've made a huge mistake there. Huge mistake.
Sheffield United, I think in the league table terms, miles better than Stoke.
Yeah, but can they do it on a wet, windy Saturday at Stoke?
You don't have it on a Saturday. It's fine on Saturdays. It's just Tuesdays.
That's fine. Okay, cool. Let's chat more about the Reds then. A couple of things. Obviously, once again, in the countdown to the game, we saw the murals around Anfield being targeted for graffiti and what have you. A little bit... less sort of like a bunch of lads going out with break hands this time. It just looked like someone had got really annoyed painting their house and gone out to take out their frustration by chucking emulsion on walls. The thing that gets lost in this, Chris, is I get it. They're becoming more iconically associated with Liverpool, and obviously because of things like CCTV, you're probably not going to go up to Anfield and throw a bucket of paint on the wall, because let's be honest, you're probably going to get obviously nicked for that. What gets lost is the humanity in all this thing. So I remember when someone put a flare in the Dixie Dean statue, and like, what people go, it's a Dixie Dean statue, and I get it, it's like an iconic, if you want to make a statement, you want to be noticed, you want to do something that winds people up, cool, but people fail to notice and think about, people lay like wreaths at the floor of that, you know what I mean, and memorials and stuff to loved ones. No one would dare do it to the eternal flame at Anfield, so people forget it, but that's so obvious. But like, it's people's houses, this, you know, Tom, whose house we are, the Henderson mural on, he wants that on there. You know, we negotiated with him to put Henderson on the side, but then he went and built the wall that has the Ian St John and Roger Hunt one on next to it, because he loves them players and he wants to celebrate them. And it's like, I get it, it's like trying to be funny and or whatever, or trying to create some sort of...
I don't get it at all, actually. I think it's terrible. I think you shouldn't be doing that in your own city anyway. If it was people from our city, if it was people from another city, you shouldn't be doing it anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
You know, you just shouldn't be disrespecting people's property like that. I mean, the one that Boss Knight have done, the Klopp one, you know, people will see that and they'll think that's Klopp and I hate Klopp. And they'll see Henderson, Liverpool's captain, I hate him. They'll see the Scouser in our team for the Anfield Raps Trent one, and they think I hate him, but they're not remembering exactly what you say, that they are people's houses. The Klopp
one's literally in someone's garden.
It's in someone's front garden, so they've had to climb over the fence or throw it from outside the fence. I mean, that's bad. It's a lot easier to attack ours in the Anfield Raps, but ultimately it's the side of someone's house. I put it like this. This is how stupid it is. Me and Pi used to play tennis in the street all the time, and we used to get dead annoyed when we were like 15 years old because the person would come out and be like, stop playing tennis against our wall, because it was a terraced house. And then it just clicked one day. I was like, oh, that would be really annoying. bang, all the fucking time. But imagine it, like, you're making someone feel unsafe in their house, because if he comes, if he thinks I can come outside because something's going on, and he might be cowering in his house. He's an older fella. You don't know who lives in those houses.
I mean, I suspect Tom would come out on the bounce if he suspected someone outside and probably do them in. But you're right.
You'd be stupid to in this city at this time with all the fucking knife stuff going on, Paul, which is fucking terrible.
Yeah. Yeah, no, 100%. And this is the thing, and it gets lost in it sometimes in the tribalism and footy, and ultimately a lot of it's just kids looking for attention. It's why we've not overly publicised it this time around, because it's just, you know, every young men in particular always want to try to find a way to leave their mark on the world there around them, and you know, sometimes
go and piss on a tree.
Well, no, honestly, go and carve the initials of the bird you fancy into a tree or whatever. Like,
it pisses me off. Is that like, this is where it gets difficult? Because I'm with you. It's like they do it for attention, but you can't ignore it, because if you ignore, you know, like we have to talk about it, but then by talking about it, are we fanning the flames? It's bollocks, really. Like, I just don't understand that you can hate Liverpool. I don't get that. In fact, no, I don't get that. I don't hating a football team is weird per se. Like, in terms of, like, I rarely hate Man United in terms of, like, a rivalry. I'm not going to go to Old Trafford and start fucking throwing paint around statues and defacing Manchester and people's property. Grow up. Like, don't be fucking idiots. And throwing paint at someone's house and all. It's like off the floor.
Yeah.
It's like, this is our city.
Yeah.
Take some pride in
it. Yeah, exactly. And if you don't like them, ignore them. Like, there's murals that good. There's the last thing in a million years I'd think about doing is going and painting over someone's mural. It's nonsense.
Well, think about now these murals aren't per se completely responsible for this, but they're drawing people to the area. They're drawing people to the businesses when the ground's not open, you know, when the shops aren't open, and people are coming down there and they're spending money in our city with blues and reds.
Yeah.
Like, it's you know, there's not everyone who sells scarves on the outside of Anfield, shock horror, is a Liverpool fan, for example.
Yeah.
But it's bringing people down and they spend their money, you know what I mean? It's our city, we should keep the money in our city. We should strive for our city to look better, to be a better place, to be a safer place. And this is all feeds into what's going on in this city at this time. It's a major issue.
It's, as you say, it's a lack of respect and sometimes it's because people are myopic and they've got their own, it's their house, their street, and then maybe you might extend it beyond that. But ultimately, if you're living in a house, in a street, and it's in Liverpool, it's your city, and you have this, and you have it in certain areas. We have it in ours. Obviously, we've gone through all the Olivia Pratt Cobell stuff around by where I live and that. And, you know, it's people open people's eyes to the importance of thing a bit more of community. But, you know, I've got a negative attitude where it's like someone else will sort that out, and you don't think about the ramifications. And again, I understand being a teenager. I was a moron, and I never went around spray painting stuff. But I can understand the mentality, because I recognise that it. But I would never have done it in that sort of scale. But it's just something to be reminded of. Again, they're people like you. At some point in your life, you're going to be a person who lives in a house, and maybe you love your football club enough that I love that. And then you've got to imagine, well, what would you do if someone, or imagine it was your mum's house or your dad's house or your granddad's house, and you found out that your granddad or your narrow granddad was terrified to come out the front door because of a gang of kids outside who were throwing paint up the wall. You would be raging. You would want to grab them people, and you would want to absolutely, you know, you'd want to pin them to the floor and scream in the face. So, like, a bit of empathy never goes amiss in these situations. I mean, ultimately, go and chuck paint at Anfield. You know what I mean? If you really asked, do it. You know what I mean? Go spray paint fucking walls of Anfield for the heart's content. That's the club's responsibility. You know what I mean? Again, this is other people's. This is private. It's private land. It's private people. It's other people who've got to foot the bills and foot the cost to sort out their own shit. The pre-Goodison Derby stuff was horrific. This just feels a little bit more just fucking stupid, like a bit of a daft afterthought. But all the same, it definitely needs to stop. Right, just briefly, Arsenal at the weekend. Steve's adamant that Liverpool are going to lose this game because Arsenal, in his words, are the best team in the country and Liverpool are shit.
No.
That's exactly what you said to
me
before.
Neither of those things are true. I think Man City are the best team in the country. Arsenal top of the league.
You said Arsenal are the best team in the country.
The league doesn't lie.
But so what's a lying when I said?
Yeah, because I think if you put City and Arsenal together, I think City would win. But yeah, Adam, I'm not confident. I'm not confident because Liverpool have shown me nothing in the Premier League to make me think they can beat anyone. Never mind the top of the league away from home. Yeah. We could be playing anyone this weekend. And
beating
I'd be
Rangers in any form, way, shape or shape does not indicate that you've got what... You can't replicate that against Arsenal.
We've won two league games, both of them were at home and one of them was a 97th minute corner kick. Like, there's nothing Liverpool have done. Last night is building blocks, but... That for me, I'm not confident. I hope I'm wrong. But if like, I do think this is a tougher test. Arsenal are a different animal. We've got build up shows, so we don't do it too much. But like, it's a different kettle of fish. Liverpool are going to go there, and it's weird really because a draw is a good result at Arsenal most times. But like, if you get one now, it's like, bloody hell, is that more points dropped? Do you know what I mean? Like, they've caught themselves.
It's the old Trafford conundrum where we're now in a position where we've left ourselves needing to win games that you don't normally.
Yeah. And we always, Jürgen Klopp has owned Arsenal. Like, we batter them all the time, or we have battered them recently. There's been 4-0, 5-0, there's been absolutely tons of it. Going back to a debut when we put four past them. But I think we're not that Liverpool at the moment, and they're not that Arsenal. So I think for the first time now, they'll be really, really confident. I'm apprehensive, I'll be honest with you.
I still think that Arsenal and we're Liverpool at the end of the day, and what that means to
we were Liverpool and they were Brighton, and they were Fulham and they were Palace and they were a fucking
garbage.
There's
teams
and
places I think where Liverpool just historically have done quite well over the last few years. I mean, the last five games they haven't scored a goal against us, and we've scored 11 against them in those last five games. So I recognise that Arsenal are a very good side. But I also recognise that Liverpool have got the potential to be better than them.
But
and
it's
so
big
for me. I still think Liverpool can win that game. If
they can,
not at worst, get a draw.
I think it's big for that,
isn't it? I mean, again, this is my point. This is what I think. Where I agree with you, Steve, is that at the minute we're in danger. So I did Deluded Gooner's YouTube channel. I had a chat with him before the Rangers game, so I was a little bit more downbeat about everything. But I mean, we're in danger of. I recognise the speech patterns and the way we're talking about things as how we used to talk about Liverpool 10 years ago, where it was red-tinted glasses. It's like, right, glasses are full because why not? But it wasn't founded in anything. It was founded in the great history of Liverpool Football Club, not necessarily how good Liverpool were at that particular moment in time. But we're also not that Liverpool. We are still more likely to be the Liverpool from last season than we are to be the Liverpool that's shite, albeit this season we haven't quite got up and running, but every game represents the opportunity to get it there. And I can look at the Brighton game and say we should have been able to see that game out because it's a home game against Brighton, but they're very much a team that was still incredibly up to speed, fluid, a unit, maybe a bit galvanised by the whole manager situation and all that, who knew their game plan inside and out. And Liverpool were a team still coming back from injury, still lacking rhythm and all that kind of stuff. I recognise it. This does sound like I'm reaching for stuff, but at the same time, if you're going to reach, I feel more confident reaching for this manager and this team than I do for other ones.
For me, it's about how Arsenal are going to set up, and I think Arsenal rightfully so need to prove that they can dominate a top side. You know, and Arsenal go out there and don't sit back. Do play. It's at the Emirates. They always do anyway. But I think they have to if they want to.
They battered Spurs.
Yeah, they did. I don't know, but like they need to make sure that they can beat a top side.
Yeah.
Like not Spurs with the greatest.
Are we a top side at the minute?
Yeah, yes. I think we are. Yeah, are I think we? When you look at it, we're a top side. We we're feared by pretty much everybody in Europe, where because we're in bad form doesn't mean we're not a top side.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the difference, isn't it? Every player around the league recognises that Liverpool can beat them. Even Manchester City players recognise that we're not doing it consistently enough, and we're not the same side as last year right now, but we've still got the potential to be that. So I think there's a good opportunity here for Liverpool to be able to do something a little bit different, to be able to go a little bit more 17-18 and maybe try and hit them a little bit on the counter-attack with the speed, with the vertical runs that we were saying before, the balls over the top from the likes of Jordan Henderson and Thiago that worked so well against Rangers, because I think all those same opportunities are still going to be there against Arsenal.
We're absolutely playing 4-3-3 with Fabinho, Hendo, Thiago in this game.
I really hope not. I really hope not, because I recognise that maybe the midfield setup doesn't suit Fabinho moving forwards, but I think it really suits Jordan Henderson. And I think that was noticeable last night. I think Hendo now, I can categorically tell you, is much better as a deep line midfielder than an eight. That's what I learned from one game last night. Yeah. It does. The eight doesn't seem to suit him anymore. The six really does. And playing alongside Thiago in that six, I thought it worked perfectly.
He wants the ball too much at times. You know what I mean? Was he supposed to just be in the right positions to get the ball when the situation dictates it? It's an interesting one, because the 4-3-3 thing, we do this. We've seen one game of evidence, and let's be honest, we beat Rangers with two set piece goals. It was encouraging, and I saw loads of positives, and I want to see that again. I want to see if we can do that again against a better team. But there is a horses for courses situation, and the fact that we do have a really good record against Arsenal, and I don't think Arsenal and City games are necessarily the problem, although they might ultimately be. We might just be done with that. It might be too well scouted, and the players might be too far.
Until Arsenal right can tell me they can put a full season together, I'm not going to believe that they're one of the best sides in the league.
And I wonder whether Klopp will just go with the mentality of we'll do what we largely do against those type of teams. It's the teams that come, I think, to try and engineer a win against you, the ones that are causing us the problems. I think when you're playing two teams up against each other and it's a battle and both teams are trying to win it in their own way, I don't know. I'm happy either way, to be honest, as long as we fucking win. Yasser Altay with the Super Chat says, what do you think about Thiago playing the 10 in a 4-2-3-1 against Arsenal?
Why?
Well, because you could potentially put, like, Fabinho and Henderson.
Why do you want Thiago in there? What are you going to do from there?
Well, I can't answer that, because
I probably wouldn't put Thiago in the 10.
I'd want him further away from the goal to play the passes in. I don't want Thiago there.
My issue with that is, I think it makes sense in like a you can look at it and say, okay, well, I could see how Thiago could be an amazing 10, because he's got great close control, he's got amazing vision, he's got great dribbling abilities. What does he lack that a great number 10 should have? It's a bit like when, I think if he was 24,
I just want Thiago to see the field,
yeah,
and I think that's much easier.
And
further
he
back.
Score. He never scores.
It's a bit of late to the end of Gerrard, when it's like, just put him in the 10 because you don't want him
I'm
doing.
Talking
all
about the
bits.
Same thing with Hendo right now, yeah, as well. Yeah. Get him further away. Give him a bit more time and space.
What you lack in Thiago, it's not even that for me. It's how good he is at, like, physically imposing himself on the game. I don't think you want that in the 10.
I want Thiago getting the borders back to goal. Which will happen a lot of the time. You want him with the field in front of him to pick those passes.
MB Brown says, best is yet to come of these forwards. Yeah, I'd agree on that. And FPL Skills says, Arsenal overran Spurs as two-man midfield. Would we struggle?
Yeah, with two we would. I don't think he'll do it. I think he'll go free. If he's going to do it, I think it'll be Roberto Firmino as like a makeshift midfielder, which we saw him go to at times. He played him as a midfielder, didn't he, a few times. I don't think he'll go away with that four, because you're right. They ran Spurs ragged in the middle of the park, really. I think Jürgen will respect. I don't think this is the same Arsenal. I don't think this is the Arsenal where you just rock up and just go with the fucking Arsenal lads, you know, tickle the bellies and bend them over. It's not that. They're a different team. All those lads with the emotional scars of getting battered by Liverpool, a lot of them are no longer there, really. It's a very youthful team, and they're a very front foot team. Martinelli has had good success. He's played well against us, and things like that. It's only really Granit Xhaka, you'd say, is of the old guard. It's a very new team, and they're on the front foot, and they're very, very confident. Usually, I think when we play Arsenal, they're already half beaten when they get off the bus.
I mean, you're saying that we beat them 4-0, 2-0, 2-0, and there was a 0-0 draw last season.
Yeah, that was the league.
It's not that significant a difference 11 from last season.
I think it is. I think it's a whole mentality shift as well.
Oh, yeah.
I think it is. Like, this reminds me a little bit of when people didn't get on to how good Jürgen Klopp's Liverpool were until before we know the battling for the title with two games to go.
I do
Arsenal, I think Arsenal are really, really strong. I think they've got a strong 11. I'm not quite sure about the squad. And I wonder as the season goes on and there's loads of games in Europe and stuff, it might fade away. But their best 11 will give anybody a game. And I go back to the FPL skills drive with the chat. Mm-hmm. I don't think I would be comfortable putting Thiago and Henderson up against a three-man Arsenal midfield. I think we will get over.
This is where I think five subs is going to come into its own. If this is a thing for us, is that I had nothing wrong with playing it in a particular way for 60 minutes and then radically changing it. And again, now that you've done it once, it's going to be easier to shift to that. Again, depending on how the game's going, or the other way around, you can play 45 minutes, 60 minutes like that, and then switch it around if you need to.
Fab's going to play. I'd be shocked if Fabinho didn't play.
No, I would be right. There's two different things here that I'd like to go through. One is what I think Jürgen will do, and I think Jürgen will go back to a three-man midfield. I would much prefer a two-man midfield than this because I'm okay moving the game. Mm-hmm. I'm okay not battling at their fucking strong point. I want to battle at their weak point, which is their defence.
Miss it out.
Yeah, just fucking get back to what we did against Rangers. You know, Arsenal's improved defence certainly is still their weakness in their side.
Gabriel Saliba, isn't it?
They're really good players, but by comparison to their front three, I think are fucking brilliant, by the way, Jesus, Martinelli and Saka, and the way the midfield's been sort of galvanised during this spell, I still think their belly is the underside where you want to attack. So I would go, let's just move the battle. We don't think we can deal with your press and your midfield at the moment, so we won't. Yeah. So there's nothing wrong with that. But I will say that I think Jürgen does go back to 4-3-3. Yeah. I think Jürgen does play Fabinho, and I think that Liverpool have been really shit playing 4-3-3, which is why I would roll the dice.
Yeah, and as you say, it's that thing of it's what you're hoping is you're getting the Community Shield performance, you know, because it's a big game and it's just two teams testing themselves head to head against one another. So yeah, again, I agree. I think
he splits the difference. I think he does four attackers, but I think one is Roberto Firmino.
And I think it should be Firmino's got a brilliant record against Arsenal as well.
I wouldn't have minded seeing Harvey Elliott in Jota's role last night. You know, I was really surprised when he didn't bring him on in that role because I think that role would suit him really well.
I wouldn't be shocked. And again, we're going to do a whole build-up show on this, so we're not going to go any longer than this point. But the pull Nunes back to impact sub for this one for me. And give him half an hour.
Jota likes playing against Arsenal as well, don't he?
Yeah, exactly. And so if you're going to play that up top, put Jota and put Firmino in there and have them just work the socks off for the team, and then you've got that option to completely mix it up if you need to. Right, sounds. Okay, that's it from the podcast for this week. We have got more. We're going to be heading into Podcast Extra live immediately after this, or available after the fact on podcast form over on redmenplus.com. It's basically the show where we say all the stuff that we're not allowed to say in public forums. So if you want a completely uncensored, wild version of these two guys alongside me.
We wouldn't say bottom on the other version.
No. Mm-hmm. We would. Wait. Maybe we would too. But depends what you do. It's fine. Head over at redmenplus.com. If you're live on YouTube or watching after the fact on YouTube, scan the QR code or head to redmenplus.com, sign up. And if you join the Club Legends, you'll be entered into the competition for the signed Glenn Johnson shirt as well. Before we leave, make sure you subscribe to the YouTube channel for free. Get us to 500,000. And then, you can get off after that. That's fine. But once we get to 500,000...
It'd be so good though, wouldn't it? Like, I mean, what's amazing is with 500,000, we could get voted in as the Prime Minister like 6 times, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
Really, a co-prime minister duo. When did you get 81,000 votes?
Hashtag keep politics out of the podcast.
No politics on the podcast. We are going to be discussing
voted with 81,000 votes.
We're going to be discussing what an absolute moron the Prime Minister is on Podcast Extra. So come and join us for that one, and we'll see us over there. Ta-da.
Much for that. I hope you enjoyed it. If you want more Red Men in your ears, then consider signing up to redmenplus.com. You get everything that's on the website in video and, if you want it, in podcast form. From £5 a month, redmenplus.com, you get 2 free items of merchandise every single season. If you sign up as a Club Legend, you get 20% discount codes every single month, exclusive discounts from our partners, as well as your name in the credits and each and every Red Men Plus show.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.